we'll turn now to our study in Deuteronomy. So if you will turn, we're in Deuteronomy 2 and 3 tonight. And I have maps for you on the overhead. We'll be looking at that in just a moment. Okay, so Deuteronomy chapter 2. Chapter 1 rehearsed the Kadesh Barnea predicament. The fateful decisions that put Israel on the plains of Moab instead of already occupant in the promised land. That was my summary of the chapter. So in this chapter, there are five sections, or these two chapters, there are five sections to consider. Now, remember, we're in the first sermon. You'll see the title is the First Sermon Part 2. The First Sermon Part 2. This is the title of that we've given to the first four chapters of the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is a collection mostly of sermons. A few little extra comments here and there that are not sermonic. Now they are in they're in the land of almost in the land of Israel. They're on the plains of Moab. They're looking westward over the Jordan River. In just a few weeks from the time that these messages are delivered, they will leave this place. They'll cross the Jordan River. The book of Joshua will begin. So that's where we're at. But these five sections in these two chapters are working on, they are recalling history, but more recent history. So the march from Kadesh to the Amorite frontier occupies the first 23 verses. The conquest of the kingdom of Sihon, the rest of chapter 2, the conquest of the kingdom of Og. What a great name that is. I've always been impressed. Very simple, you know, easy to remember. All right, so first 11 verses of chapter 3. Then a review of the distribution of the conquered land. That is the conquered land on the east side of the Jordan River. That's reviewed there. And then Moses' anticipation of future blessing. So those are the sections. Before we get into the sections, I want to show you the maps. And I'm afraid there... Can you see those borders very well? When I was loading this on here, it said, you don't have very much contrast. It makes it hard for people to see. I realize that that's so. But this came out of actually Tom Constable's notes. And so... I'm sort of stuck with what we got, but I did think the maps were quite interesting and helpful. So I'm going to get a little pointer here. I have, hopefully, there we go. All right, so there's the laser pointer. So what's the first thing I want to say? So they wanted to pass through Edom. So you see Edom right here. See this line here is called the Araba Road. Okay, and this area is called the Araba. And so they wanted to go through that way. But the, is it any better if she puts the lights out? A little bit? Okay, all right. So, they want to go that way, but remember and they said, we'll come through, we won't go off the road, we'll pay you for any food and water that you provide. But they said, no, we can't go through. We won't allow you through. They would put an army up against them. So they turn south. So instead of going that way, they're going to come down this way, all the way down to Elath, all the way of the Red Sea it's called. They come all the way down here. This is the Gulf of Aqaba right here. And this is the clay. When the Jewish kings had seaports, they would have it right down in this area. But later on, that would be much later on. So there's another highway that goes up this way through Edom called the King's Highway. They didn't even take that. They went the way of the wilderness, went further around and up that way to get to the promised land. All right, and then as they come around, they're over, let's see, there's my pointer. They're coming up on this side. You see Edom over here and Moab, and here's Ammon. They skirt around Ammon. God told them, and we'll see actually in this chapter that you're not to have any of their land. We'll talk about that in just a moment. So here's where they come. This is the land of Gilead. This is where Sihon reigns. Here's Bashan. This is where Og reigns. All right? And God told them not to go into the land of Ammon, not to go anywhere else, but this land they could take. So they conquer these two kings, they come down this way, and here they are in the plains of Moab. So that's the route that they take, and that I think helps with our understanding of this chapter. Okay, so we can leave the net maps on, but if you can turn the lights back up so everybody can see their notes and everything. So basically what I've done is I'm not going to be reading a lot of this, but let's read. I'm just going to be asking you questions, so we're going to just sort of work our way through. Chapter 2, verse 1 and 2. Then we turned and set out for the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea, as the Lord spoke to me, and circled Mount Seir for many days. And the Lord spoke to me, saying, "You have circled this mountain long enough. Now turn north." Now, so I have what changes between verse 1 and verse 2? That should be verse 3. So what changes? What is the big change there? Part? No, it's not that. No, it's not that. It's not that. This isn't a real deep question. This is not a real deep. It's not meant to be a deep question. The direction they're going? Is that what you said?
Yes,
change of direction. Okay, so they've been wandering around. They've been in the wilderness for 40 years. God says, okay, it's time. Start moving north. So big change. Now, I want you to notice verses 5, 9, and 19. What do they have in common? So verse 5. God says, "Do not provoke them." Well, verse 4, "You will pass through the territory of your brothers, the sons of Esau, who live in Seir. They will be afraid of you, so be very careful. Do not provoke them, for I will not give you any of their land, even as little as a footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession." So that's Edom and Esau. Edom is another name for Esau. Okay, that's the brother of Jacob. So then go down to verse 9. Then the Lord said to me, "Do not harass Moab, nor provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar," that's the name of the Moabite capital, "to the sons of Lot as a possession." All right, so they're not to harass Moab. And then down in verse 19, "When you come opposite the sons of Ammon, do not harass them, nor provoke them, for I will not give you any of the land of the sons of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot as a possession." All right. So what do they have in common?
They're relatives.
And so God has done something for them, right? He has given them land as well. So that's quite interesting that they have... why does God give land to these people? They're not the sons of Jacob. Okay, remember God made the covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Covenant involves the land, so why does he make this stipulation here? Rob?
Because they're guessing the sons of Abraham, so they're of his lineage, but not just through Isaac.
That's right. Well, they're at least connected, because the sons of Lot were Lot was Abraham's nephew. But there is that family connection. And I think you're right. That is the thing. These people are connected with Abraham. Lot left with Abraham. When Abraham left his father's house, from what we understand from the scriptures, his father was a worshiper of pagan gods. And Abraham left. He made a distinction. I'm going to worship the true God. I'm going to follow the true God. Well, Lot came with him. The New Testament says Lot was a righteous man. Now, he had a lot of problems. He did things that weren't right. But he, in God's eyes, he was a righteous man. So it seems to me that they have a faith, the fathers of those nations have a faith relationship with God, and so God is going to provide for them as well. Even though, you know, you read about the Edomites, well, Herod was an Edomite, okay? And you read about the Moabites, there's a lot of wickedness in Moab. They worship, they had child sacrifice in their religion, okay? Yeah, but we have Ruth coming out of Moab. Okay, so there is something, even in this, despite the wickedness that brought about these nations or that characterized these nations, God still, because of that ancient relationship, does provide a land for them. It's very interesting. All right, and then I want you to notice another thing. If you look, now, not all Bibles will have this. New American has it. If you look at verse 10, there's a beginning of a parenthesis. All right, so let me see. I'm going to read verse 9. Then the Lord said to me, "Do not harass Moab, and nor provoke it to war," and so forth. And then verse 10, the Emim lived there formerly, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also regarded as Rephaim, but the Moabites called them Emim. The Horites formerly lived in Seir, but the sons of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them and settled in their place, just as Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave to them. End of parenthesis. Okay, so in the New American, they put parentheses around those verses. Then also verse 20. So that's where, verse 19, he says, don't go bother the Ammonites. And then parenthesis. It is also regarded as the land of Rephaim. For Rephaim formerly lived in it, but the Ammonites called them Zamzumim. Okay, a people as great, numerous, and tall as the Anakim. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place, just as he did for the sons of Esau, who live in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them. They dispossessed them and settled in their place, even to this day. And the Avim, who lived in the villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim, who came from Kaphtor, destroyed them and lived in their place. And then he comes back and says, "Arise, get out, set out, pass through the valley of Arnon." So you notice the parenthesis is put there because this seems to be just a little aside, sort of like a footnote, sort of like not part of the speech. All right? So let's see, what did I ask you about this? I've got to find my notes here. Okay. What is the significance of these parentheses? So hint, consider the content. I've read the verses to you. What do you think that... What do you think's going on there? Okay, remember, we're talking about a sermon, but then we have these parentheses. So what do you think's going on? Debbie?
Reminding them of where God had given victory over giants?
Well, these aren't the Israelites, though. He's talking about the giants that had been there. Some of them had been cleared out by the Edomites, some by the Ammonites. Mm-hmm. So... that's not, so it couldn't be that. So what else do you, what other things could you think about? Think about, look at verse, especially verse 12. What is that talking about?
It seems to me that part of that's looking back. It talks about Israel, just as Israel was, just as God did for Israel in the land of their possession.
Okay, so that's
sounds like a future writer putting a parenthesis.
There you go. Okay, there you go. All right, so Cal's on the right track. Okay, so that's written in past tense there. Now, they haven't even gone into the promised land yet. They haven't even, like David hasn't even met Goliath yet. Neither of them are born. Okay, but, okay, so what he's saying here, what most people think is that this section... remember, we said this is mostly speeches, but there are sections that appear to be little extra stuff put in by an editor. Now, that doesn't do it. That doesn't damage the fact that Moses is the author. Somebody, maybe it was Joshua, maybe it was somebody else, was led by God to insert in these places these notes to explain the background and to tie it in with things that people who are reading it in that day would know. All right, so that's what that is about. Now, let's see. What do verses 14 and 16 refer to? All right, so we should read that. And what is the key phrase? Now, the time that it took for us to come from Kadesh Barnea until we crossed over the brook Zered was 38 years, until all the generation of the men of war perished from within the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them. Moreover, the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from within the camp, until they all perished. So it came about when all the men of war had finally perished from among the people that the Lord spoke to me, saying, "Today you shall cross over Ar, the border of Moab." All right, so what is repeated in those verses?
People that disobeyed way back when?
Well, it's the people who disobeyed way back when, but a certain category of them.
The men of war.
The men of war. Yeah, the 20 and up. Okay, so they... God was waiting, this whole wilderness wandering was God waiting until those guys were done. Now, what do you think that means for the people who are now about to cross the promised land and conquer all of these tribes that God is saying to conquer?
They do what he says.
Well, they better do what he says. But what about their experience?
Yeah, no combat
experience. Yeah, no combat experience. Or very little, right? Now, some of them have been trained by these men, but so forth. But that generation, so it's very interesting. God is, and what is the point of that? Well, who's going to win the battle for them? God is. All right, so that is what they have to depend on. All right, so then let's go down to verses 24 to 37 is the conquest of Sihon and the, what was his, let me just see, verse 24. Valiant King of, I have given Sihon the Amorite. So he's just given a generic name. Amorite is a name that is somewhat synonymous with Canaanite, and it refers to, you know, basically all of the peoples that are in the lands, like those in Bashan, they would be Amorites, and the people in Jericho, you know, they all would have their own little, you know, name. Some of them might have different names, but like there's Jebusites in Jerusalem, they're also Amorites, Canaanites. Whole idea, it's all connected together. All right. So Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, his land I have given him into your hand. All right. And verse 25, this day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you upon the peoples everywhere under the heavens, who when they hear report of you will tremble and be in anguish because of you. Okay, so what changes in verses 24 and 25? What's new here? Remember what he said about Edom, Moab, and Ammon. So what's the big change?
Now it's fight.
Now we're going to conquer these people. All right. Now, how did the Israelites conquer Sihon? So look at verses 32 and 33. All right. Verses 32 and 33. Let's see. Then Sihon with all his people came out to meet us in the battle at Jahaz. The Lord our God delivered them over to us, and we defeated him with his sons and all his people. So how did they conquer? Through the power of the Lord. That's right. The Lord delivered them. Now, verse 37. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so verse 37 is a summary statement. He says, only you did not go near the land of the sons of Ammon all along the river Jabbok, or Jabbok, and the cities of the hill country wherever the Lord our God had commanded us. So what does that tell us about the people and their relationship to God at this point? They're obedient. Yeah, they're doing what God says. All right. And then, let's see. In verses 26 to 29, there is an offer of peace that Moses makes to Sihon. He says, let us march through. It's very much like what he says to the to the Edomites and the Moabites, let us pass through your land. I will travel only in the highway, so on and so forth. And he says in verse 29, just as the sons of Seir, just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me until I cross over the Jordan unto the land which the Lord our God has given to us. So this offer of peace no doubt came from the Lord's prompting, I put in the notes. But Sihon's reaction provides a provocation for battle, authorized by the Lord. But what problematic issue does this event raise for us? We read about the destruction of the people of Sihon. Rob?
Is it that they're utterly destroyed, even the children?
They're utterly destroyed, even the children. Okay. Now, we're not going to discuss this particular issue at this time. We're just going to note it. It's mentioned here. It's also mentioned with the destruction of Og and his people. Okay, when we get to chapter 7, there's much more thorough discussion of this. So we'll wait until then. But the one thing that we'll note is that we have to remember that God, that there is a moral component to this war. And God is using Israel as an instrument of judgment against the great wickedness of these people. So I know it's a thing that sounds very shocking to our ears in this era, in this generation, but There is a rationale for it in the scriptures that we, it's not something I don't think that we take great delight in, but it is something that is real, and we have to, we just acknowledge that it's there at this point, and we will talk about this at length when we get to a more full discussion of it in chapter 7. Now, how are we doing?
Cliffhanger.
Well, it's going to take us a little while to get to chapter 7, too. So it's a, you know, you're just teetering on the edge, just teetering for quite a while. Okay? All right, so now I want to compare. Just go over to Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 and 4. There is a little thing here that the commentaries talk about, and it, we have to tie in these verses to get it. So, verse 23, verse 3 and 4. No Ammonite or Moabite shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of their descendants, even to the tenth generation, shall ever enter the assembly of the Lord. Why? Because they did not meet you with food and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor of Mesopotamia to curse you. All right, so now that you say, all right, okay, so God has this decree against the Moabites and the Ammonites, even though God said you can't take any of their land. Now, I want you to go back to what part of what we just read. In the offer that is made to Sihon, you will sell me food for, verse 28, chapter 2, you will sell me food for money so that I may eat, give me water for money so that I may drink, only let me pass through on foot, just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me. Do you see what the problem might be? Okay, so the Moabites and the Ammonites didn't give any food and didn't give any water. Okay? Doesn't say anything about the Edomites. All right. So, what's the solution? Well, one commentary, which is, I was a little shocked, it's a fairly conservative commentary set, said, well, Moses was just stretching the truth here. Now, that sort of said, wait a minute. That's not a real good answer. Okay? I mean, Moses is God's lawgiver. He's stretching the truth. He's the guy that said, thou shalt not bear false witness, right? Yeah, I don't think that's the answer. Okay? So what is the answer? Okay? I do think there is an answer. I think there's an answer in our text right here. So let's look. I'm going to read the verses slowly. You think about what we're reading. And see if you can think of an answer. Remember, okay, back in Deuteronomy 23, or later in Deuteronomy 23, it's saying, no Moabite, no Ammonite, they don't get to come in to the people because they didn't offer bread and water and they hired Balaam. All right? So, let's read this. What verses are we in? 28 and 29. Okay, I'll read them to you again. You will sell me food for money so that I may eat, and give me water for money so that I may drink, only let me pass through on foot, just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me, until I cross over the Jordan into the land which the Lord our God is giving to us. All right, so what is...
There's brackets in my Bible.
There's brackets in your Bible? What do they say?
Well, they start with verse 29, bracket, sorry, and then it ends, did unto me, there's a bracket. That whole, that.
Oh, really?
Is in the real Bible.
There's a bracket in your Bible. I don't know why the brackets are in your Bible, but anyway, because the commentaries didn't say anything about the brackets, so I don't know. They just said, the one commentary just said Moses told a whopper. Well, no. Okay, so think about it. Let's look back at our map. Okay, and all right. So let's see if I still have the pointer on. Let's get the pointer back on. Okay, so here's... Okay, so they're coming up this side here. They're going up like this. They're going around, and then they come across here. Here they are. They're confronting Sihon. Okay, so if you look carefully at our verse... they say, only let me pass through on foot, just as the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me. So if you divide up the verse, you could say, well, He's not necessarily saying that all these people offered us food. They all let them pass through, at least on this side, up on this side. Okay, so they passed through the outskirts of their land. So I think Moses is telling the truth here. That's what happened. Maybe Edom offered food and water this time. They didn't offer it when they were trying to come through this way, right through the middle. But they did perhaps offer it as they're coming up this side. Okay? On this side. So I think you can read the verse so that you don't make Moses lie and you also make out the Moabites and the Ammonites to be bad guys. And of course the Ammonites and the Moabites were the ones who hired Balaam to curse Israel. That's when they're up here. They've come up here. They've defeated Sihon. They've defeated Og. They're moving down this way. And this is where the Israelites are when the Ammonites and the Moabites hire Balaam to curse Israel. And they bring about, they try to tempt them with the incident at Peor, where they try to tempt them into false worship. Many people of Israel died that day. So that, I think, is a later offense. And that's coupled with this perhaps minor offense, relatively minor offense. They let them come through, but they didn't offer them anything as they go up on that side of the water. Okay, that side of the borders. Okay, so to me that solves the problem. It's an explanation to the thing. And it doesn't make Moses out to be a liar. So I was a little bit shocked. If you run across a commentary, here, this is a commentary I expected to be conservative. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. How can you do that? Anyway, that's what he did. All right, so how are we doing on time? We're really near the end. And I'm sort of not quite sure. I was afraid of this. We'd only get through chapter 2. But let's just quickly talk. There's not a lot of things in chapter 3. The questions are shorter. Okay, so the conquest of Og, chapter 3, verses 1 through 11. The nation next turned against Bashan. We find no offer at passing through peacefully. Instead, Og, king of Bashan, comes out to meet them immediately. And I'm just going to give you the answers rather than ask you the question. So what does God emphasize in this victory? Well, the victory comes from God, not from their own might. Now, verse 11 has this little interesting notation about the size of Og's bed. So let's look at that one. For only, and this is in brackets. Now, whether this is added by an editor or not, we don't know. For only Og, king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaim in that area. Behold, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. It is in Rabbah, the sons of Ammon. It's on display in a museum there. He's saying, you can go look, it's there. Its length was 9 cubits, its width 4 cubits by ordinary cubits. That means it was 13 feet long and 6 feet wide. That is a king-size bed. All right? So he was a big dude. All right? And it points out that God gave them the victory over the giants that the previous generation feared 40 years before. So it's very interesting. Here he's rehearsing these victories. They're sitting on the banks of Jordan. They're about to go across, and he's rehearsing these most recent victories. The defeat, chapter 1, defeat, previous generation. This generation, victories. They beat Og, the giant with the supersized bed. Okay? And so then it talks about verses 12 to 20. Moses rehearses the distribution of the lands of Og and Sihon to Gad, Reuben, and half of Manasseh. This grant was conditional on their loyalty of going with the rest of Israel, sending their men of war across with the rest of Israel to help in the conquest of the land west of the Jordan. And then Joshua would send them home. And you can read in Joshua where he does exactly that. Then we have the anticipation of future blessing, the end of the chapter. So I ask the question, what does the recall of their recent conquest of Og and Sihon serve? Well, it reassures Joshua and the people that the Lord would continue to grant them the land as they marched across Jordan. The Lord is fighting for you, it says in verses 21 and 22. When Moses pleads with God to let him into the land, what does God's response in verse 26 imply? The Lord was angry with me on your account, would not listen to me, and the Lord said, enough, speak to me no more of this matter. What that implies is that Moses was asking repeatedly. And in fact, when he says, He says, I also pleaded with God at that time. The verb form there gives an indication that it was, he was pleading over and over again, Lord, this one request, please let me go into the land. Okay? He really wanted to go, but God says no. And so basically, he's finally saying, look, no means don't ask again. Okay? So what effect does this report of Moses' conversation with God have when he also reports God's words about Joshua, verse 28. But charge Joshua. Okay, you're not going to go. I'm going to take you, go up, you can look into the land. But charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go across to the head of this people, and he will give them as an inheritance the land which you will see. All right? So, can somebody just go tell him to wait? He's 5 minutes early. Okay? All right. So what does it mean? It establishes Joshua as God's man for the job. Okay? So that's the that's rushing through chapter 3. And you can study through all of that. Alright, before we close, any applications that you would like to suggest from these chapters, things that we've studied tonight, anything that you gained from it that you thought is something that we could apply to our own lives? Don't feel crammed or rushed. Marlene?
Well, God knows the condition or the heart of the, when they refused to go into the land. He knew, and he was going to deal with them.
That's right. Okay, so the people could trust. They could wait, couldn't they? Could trust on that. All right. Well, God knew what was going to happen, knew how he would deal with them. All right, Gordon.
Well, I guess I'm just going back to when you said that it's going to go to chapter 7.
Oh, yes.
When I was over in Vancouver for Easter, the conversation got what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And my younger sister, I'm sure she got it from somebody else, not from reading the Bible, but that's the figure come out, and God told him to kill his son, God told him to kill children.
Oh, yeah.
And I answered as best I could, but I didn't have a good answer.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the first answer is, God is God and you're not.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first answer. Rob?
I had that many years ago. Somebody said a similar thing. Oh, what about killing all the children? And I said...
Let's just wait, Richard. Let's just wait. Okay.
I said, if a nation was doing... sacrificing children in the world today, I would hope that the United States would go in and clean them up. Now, of course, it's a little different, but they wouldn't kill the children doing it. But the justice is the thing I was trying to point to.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of things that aren't in the context that they don't know. A lot of times, people will raise this and they say, "Well, you don't know what these people were like." And the thing is that they were pretty bad. Okay.
I went with God died on the cross for him.
But
I didn't answer your question properly.
Yeah, I understand. It's a hard question to answer, but we will work on some answers on this going forward.